All right, everybody, get ready, because today we are diving deep into the wild world of chemical reactions. We're cracking open our well-worn copy of CLUE by Cooper and Klemkowski and heading straight into Chapter 7. Expert speaker, are you ready to react?
Oh, absolutely. By the end of this deep dive, we'll be identifying reaction types like pros.
You know, it's funny because we all see things changing around us all the time, right? Like ice melting, wood burning.
Right.
But we know that not every type of change is actually a chemical reaction. How do we tell the difference?
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? It all comes down to identity.
Okay, I like that. Identity.
So think of it like this. When ice melts, the water molecules are just loosening up a bit. They're going from a very organized structure to something a little bit more free-flowing. Kind of like,
like a dance party.
There you go. But there's still H2O, just in a different state of matter, you see.
Okay, so it's not a chemical reaction, just a physical change.
Exactly.
But a true chemical reaction.
Well, that's where it gets really interesting. That's where bonds are being broken, new bonds are formed, and you end up with entirely new substances.
Yeah, like if you could take those dancing water molecules and instead of just watching them change their moves, you actually split them apart completely, you'd be separating the hydrogen and oxygen atoms. Now, those atoms, they can rearrange and form totally new dance partners, like hydrogen gas, that's H2, and oxygen gas, O2, you know, the stuff we breathe.
Wow. Okay, so that's a pretty dramatic example. And speaking of dramatic, the book talks about how important collisions are for these reactions to even happen.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it makes sense, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, you can't have a dance party if nobody shows up.
Exactly. It's all about that molecular meet and greet. But here's the thing. Not all collisions are created equal.
Oh, that's true.
So you can imagine a really crowded room full of people, right?
Right.
You might bump shoulders with someone, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to spill your drink and strike up a conversation.
So what makes a collision worthy of an actual reaction then?
Well, it needs energy, just like you need enough energy to, say, break the ice and start a conversation at a party.
Right, right.
Molecules need a certain amount of energy to break those existing bonds and then form new ones. And this is where the idea of temperature comes in.
Okay.
Think of it like the excitement level of the molecule.
Okay, so the hotter things get, the more those molecules are going to be bumping into each other with enough energy to actually react.
Yeah, exactly. It's a wilder dance party. And you know what?
Right.
This reminds me of trying to like start a campfire.
Okay.
You need that initial burst of energy, right? From a match or something, just to get things going. But once those logs get hot enough,
yeah,
that reaction keeps going.
It does. And it even generates a bunch of heat itself.
Exactly. It's feeding that energy back into the system.
Okay, that actually reminds me of something I was wondering about. The book mentions that some reactions happen super fast.
Right.
Like, think about putting salt in water. It dissolves, like, immediately. But then other reactions, they seem to take, like, forever.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like rust farming on your bike.
Exactly. So if it's all about collisions, then what makes that difference in speed? Where are some reactions like lightning fast and some take years?
That's a great question. It's like the difference between, you know, just bumping into someone on the street.
Right.
And having a really productive conversation at, say, a speed dating event.
Okay.
It's not just the number of collisions, but how likely those collisions are to lead to something more reactive.
Okay. So it's not just about bumping into each other. It's about the potential for a real connection.
Yeah, exactly. Molecularly speaking, of course.
Of course, of course.
Some molecules, they're just naturally more compatible, you see. They've got the right energy levels, the right orientation, and boom, a reaction happens quickly. But in other cases, the molecules, well, they need a bit more convincing.
Yes, some reactions are just meant to be, and some, well,
they fizzle out.
They fizzle out, exactly.
Now, speaking of reactions with a certain spark.
Ooh, I like where this is going.
Let's talk about a very specific type of reaction. Acids and bases.
Okay. Acids and bases. Now, when I think of an acid, honestly, I think of something kind of scary, like something that's going to burn through my clothes.
Yeah, they definitely get a bad rap.
I mean, I think about, like, lemon juice making my mouth pucker or, you know, that time I accidentally spilled drain cleaner and almost ruined my sink.
Yeah, definitely don't want to mess with that stuff.
Yeah.
But in chemistry, it turns out that acids and bases, they're actually much more nuanced than just, you know, scary, corrosive things.
Okay, so what are we talking about then?
Well, we have to put on our detective hats.
I've
because we need to investigate the different ways that chemists actually define those terms. acids and bases.
I am so ready. Let's solve this mystery.
Okay. A good starting point is the Arrhenius model. This model, it defines an acid as any substance that releases a hydrogen ion, that's H plus AE, when it's dissolved in water.
Okay, so like it's donating a proton.
Yeah, exactly. It's a proton donor, ready to share that positive charge.
Okay.
So think about hydrochloric acid, that's HCl.
Okay.
It breaks apart in water, right? It dissolves and gives you H plus and Cl ions.
Okay, that makes sense. And so then a base, is that the opposite then? Like it's soaking up all those protons?
You're on the right track. The Arrhenius model, it says that a base is anything that releases hydroxide ions, OH, when it's dissolved in water.
So it's like a proton sponge.
Exactly. Okay. And an example of that would be sodium hydroxide, you know, NaOH, that's lye. And it's a strong base because it does exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you Na plus and OH ions in the solution.
Okay, so acids, they're all about that H plus sign, and bases, they're all about the OH.
Yeah, that's the main idea behind the Arrhenius model. But, you know, there's a catch.
Uh-oh. What's the catch?
This definition, it only really works when we're talking about things happening in water.
Okay, so it's a good starting point, but it's not the whole picture.
Exactly.
We need something a little bit broader to really understand all the acid-base chemistry happening in the universe, right?
You got it. And that's where the Brønsted-Lowry model comes in.
Okay.
Now this one, this definition, it broadens our perspective a little bit by focusing on the transfer of that proton, that H plus ion. So an acid is still a proton donor, but a base is defined as a proton acceptor.
Okay. So it's not just about which molecules have that H plus to give away, but which ones are ready to receive it. It's the giving and the taking.
That's a great way to put it. The Brønsted-Lowry model, it helps us look at these reactions, you know, even when water isn't involved. But it gets even wilder.
Okay.
Remember how we were saying that water can be a solid or a liquid?
Yeah, yeah.
It turns out that water, it can actually be both an acid and a base.
Wait, how is that even possible? Is it like some kind of molecular double agent or something?
That's a great way to think about it. It really depends on who that water molecule is interacting with. So if water bumps into a molecule that's really good at donating those protons, you know, like a strong acid,
yeah,
water is going to act like a base and it'll just accept that proton. But if water meets up with a strong base, you know, something that's really eager to grab a proton, water can actually switch roles.
What?
It can donate one of its own hydrogens and act as an acid instead.
So water really is going with the flow. It's like the life of the party. Up for whatever.
Exactly. Now, are you ready to take this acid-base investigation even deeper?
Always. Hit me with it.
All right. There's one more model we need to look at, and that is the Lewis model.
Okay.
And this one kind of throws out the rule book completely, and it focuses just on those electron pairs that we keep talking about.
Okay. Electron pairs. I'm intrigued.
All right. So a Lewis acid doesn't really care about donating protons. It's all about attracting those electron pairs.
Okay. It's like a magnet.
Yes, a molecular magnet. I like that. But instead of attracting metal, it's attracting negativity. Now, a Lewis base, on the other hand, it's all about generosity, you know? It's ready to donate an electron pair to anything that is willing to accept it.
So we've got the Lewis acid kind of bringing this magnetic pull, and the Lewis base that's ready to donate its electrons. They're like a perfect match.
Exactly. And this helps us explain even more reactions, including ones that don't even have hydrogen involved, like boron trifluoride. No hydrogen to donate, but it still acts like a Lewis acid because it's all about that electron interaction.
So we've gone from these basic definitions of acids and bases to, you know, this whole intricate world of electron interactions and molecular matchmaking.
And, you know, speaking of matchmaking,
yes,
this idea of electron sharing, it's really important for understanding two special types of molecules that we see a lot in organic chemistry. And those are nucleophiles and electrophiles.
Okay. Now, when we say organic chemistry, we're really talking about chemistry that involves carbon, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's the chemistry of carbon-containing molecules. The building blocks of life as we know it.
Right, because carbon, it's kind of like the social butterfly of the periodic table. It'll bond with pretty much anything.
That is a great way to put it. I like that. So a nucleophile, this is a nucleus-loving molecule, and it carries around an extra pair of electrons, kind of like a little gift for that special someone. And it's drawn to positive charges, ready to share those electrons.
So then the electrophile, that's the special someone.
Yes, you got it. Electrophiles, they are electron loving, and they usually carry a slight positive charge. So they're kind of irresistible to those generous nucleophiles.
So it's like molecular matchmaking.
Oh.
The nucleophile is bringing those electrons, the electrophile is bringing those positive vibes, and boom, love connection.
It's a beautiful thing. And you know what's even more amazing? These reactions, this dance between these nucleophiles and electrophiles, it's happening inside you right now.
Really?
Yeah. These are the basis for so many biological processes, from how your DNA replicates itself to the creation of hormones.
So all this chemistry that we've been talking about,
yeah,
it's not just happening in a lab somewhere. It's the driving force of life itself.
Exactly. Like, think about it. A tiny methylation reaction. That's where a nucleophile donates just a single methyl group, that's CH3.
Right.
That can actually determine whether a gene gets turned on or off.
Wow.
And that can influence everything about you, from your eye color to your risk for certain diseases.
It's really incredible how these tiny little chemical interactions can have such huge impacts. Well, listeners, I hope this deep dive has you looking at the world around you in a whole new way. We've gone from these basic definitions to, you know, mind-blowing biological processes. And we owe it all to Chapter 7 of CLUE by Cooper and Klimkowski. Expert speaker, thanks for nerding out with me about chemical reactions today.
Oh, anytime. Always happy to talk about reactions.
And to all our listeners, remember, the next time you see ice melting, just think about those water molecules rearranging. And if you happen to spill some lemon juice, take a moment to appreciate that subtle dance of protons and electrons. It's chemistry in action. Until next time, keep those reactions going.